Hello, welcome to Searching for American Gods, an American Gods podcast based off of or covering the television show American Gods on Starz. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you this evening?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yesterday, March 17th, the second episode of Season 2 was released for the show called The Beguiling Man. We are recording on the 18th, and hopefully we'll have this released either on the 19th or the 20th of March.
Now, was this beguiled or beguiling?
The Beguiling. I'm sorry. Yes, you're absolutely right.
No, I didn't know. I was just because I didn't know if it was beguiled or beguiling.
Yep, The Beguiling Man. Written by Tyler DiNucci and Andres Fisher Centeno, Frederick E. O. Toye was the director, probably best known as a television director for The Good Wife, Person of Interest, Brain Dead, and Westworld, and 11-22-63, among other things, including Lost, Falling Skies, and whatnot. He actually directed 3 episodes of Westworld, a bunch of episodes of Person of Interest, a bunch of episodes of The Good Wife. So he's been jumping around in various genres. So what are we here? The podcast, basically, as I said, we critique and so forth. We recorded 2 years ago, Season 1, and this is now Season 2 of the show. Oddly, we didn't get any email, but again, folks probably won't find our podcast for maybe another week or two if they aren't familiar with it already. And even if they are familiar with it already, it's been 2 years since they probably listened to it. Let's see. Any other further things you wanted to bring up, Mike, about our podcast itself?
Well, if you enjoy listening to our podcast, again, there's the Dark Discussions podcast and You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast that's going to be returning in mid-April. And you can always come visit us. We're going to be at 2 conventions in the next couple of months at Scaricon New England in... Is it Framingham or is that?
Yep, Framingham, Massachusetts, the largest town in the United States. Does not have a mayor. That's a suburb of Boston for folks who are curious. Continue, Mike.
And Scares of Care Weekend, which is in Williamsburg, Virginia, and that's beginning of August. So if you're interested, right. we'll probably both be there.
Yes.
Everything, health, finances, and all the rest permitting.
That's correct. And for folks who aren't familiar with Williamsburg, it is an hour away from 2 big cities, both Richmond and Virginia Beach. Yes, that's right. And we also will be in Mystic, Connecticut, which will be the last weekend of July, with co-host of the Dark Discussions podcast. Basically, American Gods, or I should say the Searching for American Gods, is a spinoff of Dark Discussions podcast, which can be found at darkdiscussions.com. That's the umbrella for this podcast. So folks who want to email us or follow us on Facebook and whatnot, you would email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com. And our Facebook group for this podcast is also Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. You can, though, find us 2 ways where podcasts are found. You can find us under Dark Discussions Podcast, because that feed basically releases all the Dark Discussions podcast plus Searching for American Gods podcast. Or you could just search for Searching for American Gods, and that feed will only have the Searching for American Gods. You did mention Dark Discussions, as I did, Mike, and for folks who don't know what that is, that's a podcast that discusses genre film mostly, weekly. So basically we pick a new film, many times independent or VOD straight to VOD films and things, but also Hollywood blockbusters as well. Basically genre films such as horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, cult films, grindhouse film, art house, midnight movies, or whatnot. For example, the last couple of films that we've done are the Irish horror film, The Hole in the Ground. We also did the Escape Room film that came out early January. And we basically critique and discuss and give our opinions of such films. And for here, please email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com because we would like to hear your feedback and we will read your email on the podcast. So, Mike, I guess we can get into our topic tonight, which is The Beguiling Man, as I mentioned. Let's see. Let's start with you and your feelings for this second episode.
I honestly wasn't that excited by it. It felt... I'm trying to think how to describe it. It didn't feel like a whole lot happened. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what there was really to say. What is there to grab onto as a topic or a theme? I was just kind of feeling it lacking for the podcast, and unfortunately, I was kind of busy today, so I didn't get a good chance to rewatch it yet either. So I was kind of felt kind of meh about it. Because I didn't really think it really moved the story along very much. And I wasn't all that interested in seeing Shadow's backstory, which was the big aspect of this at this point.
All right. Very well, yeah, for me, I actually felt, similar to you, Mike. I didn't feel this episode, really brought much to the table except for Shadow's backstory. It really was just a group of characters splitting up and these group of characters going to a certain location. For example, if this was a novel, they would have simply said two characters jump in a car and they arrive in Wisconsin or wherever. Here, unfortunately, we actually see the journey. And if this was written as a novel or a short story, it would really just be a bunch of filler that was unnecessary. So, I mean, I did like the dialogue between the characters as they were driving in cars, but I didn't feel it really helped with the story, and it felt like they're padding the season a little bit by having an episode like this. I, unlike you, did a little bit like the backstory of Shadow, since his character is very, I guess, a curiosity, because, you know, why is this story focusing on him in the first place and who he is? Because why are these gods, noticing him unlike any other person on the road and so forth. So,
but I didn't get much of an answer to that. Did you?
No, not really.
I mean, there was, don't get me wrong, there's some interesting things there, but I would much have rather spent some time, more in the present day and move that storyline forward. Now, part of it's that I can be impatient, and I kind of want to get to, you know, more of the story about the American gods themselves. I have suspicions about Shadow Moon's parentage, although, you know, I'd be more interested in an answer to it than just more teasing about it. Like you look at Game of Thrones, you know, there's been a long mystery about who Jon Snow's parents were, whether they finally resolved at the end of season 7, but they didn't spend a lot of episodes talking about it, right? It was there. Fans argued about it. Fans talked about it.
Right.
And it was
really never consequential to the fight for the throne until really the last season, right?
Right.
At least that's how I felt.
Right. It's if you were a casual viewer of the show, then the whole all you needed to know was John was a bastard, and that was about it. Right. They never really addressed it in great detail. There was a line here, a line there that teased something out for those people who were obsessed about it. Yeah. And the fact that he was a bastard was important in the larger politics of the situation. But it wasn't the mystery of who his daddy was or who right. his mommy was, because you thought you knew who his father was. Wasn't something that was driving the character. It wasn't driving the plot. You know, until you got this big revelation at the end of the season.
Right.
And so here, if you're going to spend some time doing it, I kind of would prefer to get the answer. I mean, my suspicion, and I don't know, because I haven't read the novel, my suspicion is his father will come out to be a god of some sort, whether it's going to be Odin or somebody else, I have no idea. But I'm sure he's going to come out to have some sort of divine blood in him at some point. That would be my guess, because you know his mom and that's it.
Right.
And he's got a mysterious father, and the gods have an interest in him. Can't imagine why. So he'll end up being like a demigod or something like that. And, you know, it's not like unless it's something completely different that I'm not expecting. It's not that deep of a mystery. It's not that hard to figure out.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in the very first episode of season one, he basically says that his mother is African-American and his father is Norwegian from Norway. And so as the first character, god he meets, basically, or is important to him, happens to be Votan or Odin. And as we know, he's a god of the Teutonics. And so you can kind of gather that, okay, so the question really is who's his mother, not his father, if we can assume that Odin slash Votan is his father, right?
And now, right, and the mother was just not, it was just a person, as far as we could tell.
Right, exactly. Yeah, maybe a hippie type, right? Because she, I don't know. I mean, Bohemia maybe, because she went to a different country and.
Yeah.
You know.
I think Odin called her a flower child or something like that with the big afro, and he kind of described her, which would make sense if you'd met her before.
Right. And there you go. That a flower child is basically a synonym for hippie or bohemian, basically, when you think about it. And yeah, if she had the afro, that was a way people wore their hair back in those days, you know, like,
right.
You know, so especially those who were, you know, in the bohemian lifestyle, I guess. So,
right. It's also important in this episode, we're catching her. What would you say? Late 80s, early 90s?
Exactly. So I'm thinking she's probably in her 40s at this point, and she was a hippie in the late 1960s, early 70s. You know, she was probably in the 20s. So 20s, 30s, so late 90s maybe. So,
right,
yeah.
So she's a very different person, but, you know, where Shadow Moon kind of grew up in France, she's American, she's bringing him home, you know, and a lot of people grew up very differently than who they were back in the day.
Yes, absolutely. That's just what they were when they were younger, and then when they get older, they change.
Right. Well, the irony is that, you know, you had the peace generation, the hippie generation, was the 60s, what they referred to as the 60s.
Yeah.
Or the hippie generation. Hippie decade, and then that gave way to the 70s, which was the me decade.
Yep.
And then people refer to the 80s as the decade of greed. Well, reality is it was the same generation of people. It was all the baby boomers that personified those traits in all three, as they went from being, you know, the hippies to the disco children to the Wall Street and business types, just a difference. Are they in their 20s, 30s, or 40s? Where are they in their life at that point?
Exactly.
So because it was because it's such a large demographic, they kind of controlled it. You know, so she's just well, she hasn't. I mean, she's in that boardroom executive type. You know, but she's certainly like the hippies changed dramatically. In large part, they ended up becoming a lot of people with three-piece suits. You know, so did she sort of become someone who's not as much of a
flower child.
Yeah, flower child, or you know, a revolutionary, or whatever it was that she was back in the 60s. Although there was still, I thought it was interesting when she's talking to Shadow Moon after he gets busted by the cops.
Yep.
And she's referring to the stories they've been told. Right, this is their story. That you're trying to take what's theirs. And it was kind of an interesting and enlightened, in a way, and empathetic sort of approach to that, given that her son was just busted for stealing his own Walkman back.
Right, yep.
And I don't know that if I was in his position, that I'd be wanting my mom to not exactly be taking the cop side, but to be trying to... what would be like diffuse my own anger.
Right.
You know,
right.
Why aren't you mad for me? Just, you know,
right.
Why aren't you mad at them? Because they're the ones who we're kind of out of line. Arguably.
Right. Well, right. Because actions, create reactions. If they didn't steal, he wouldn't have got in a fight. And though he got in a fight and stole it back or whatever and gets arrested, obviously, he misbehaved and whatnot, but his behavior is a little different than if he was out on the street breaking into houses just for the hell of it with punks.
Right, and even I don't give a shit that he got in a fight. You know, teenage kids do that a lot. You know, it's just, you know, it's just kids busting balls. But I mean, he does run full force into a couple of cops. Sure, it's gonna. I don't care who he is. It's going to look suspicious, but I don't know that we saw anything, unless my memory is wrong. I don't remember anything that they did that I thought was too out of bounds.
Right.
The cops, right. They didn't rough him up or anything. And
no, he was already roughed up because of the fight. It wasn't
right.
Because of the cops. Right. And being whether or not you a person who's listening to this supports up the police in general, I mean, because again, everything should be individual policemen or police people and individual police forces and not grouped as a whole. But keeping it at the black or white, whether you support the police or not, the police show up and they just see a bunch of people fighting and causing trouble. They don't know who's guilty or who's not. And they round up everybody who's swinging punches or kicking. Right. I mean, that's just.
But I think part of it is that they're trying to give, you know, an impression of the story of America, at least for a person of color, right, is what experience is he getting? And the big part of the show is storytelling.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
And so what's the story of, back to episode 2 of the first season of... and where Mr. Nancy is telling the story of the black man in America on the slave ship.
Right.
And it was something along the lines of once upon a time, there was a man and he got fucked, you know,
right.
And in 100 years, you're still going to be fucked. And in 200 years, you're still going to be fucked, you
right.
know?
Which is interesting in this case, because the perpetrators to the crime against Shadow as a young adult were, black folk, I don't know if they were African-American because they could be Caribbean-American or whatever, but they were black folk. And
well,
they
it means they're tracing the history back to Africa at some point.
Sure. But right. But
directly or indirectly.
Right. But I just know a lot of folks that are Caribbean do not like to be called African-American because they're
okay.
Not African-American. That's the reason why I'm saying black instead of either or. But the thing is that they then also not only are the perpetrators of the crime against Shadow, these black folk, but they also use racist terms against him because they can tell that or assume that he is either half white, which he is, or mulatto, if you prefer. So it is curious that it goes there. And then, of course, they have the cops then get involved. But so I'm not quite sure exactly.
Well, I think you're getting a guy who's kind of stuck between both worlds.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And, you know, again, now maybe this is a different metaphor for his situation in that he's human and part God. Right. He's stuck between the world of the gods and the world of humanity.
Right.
Yep. You know, in that he's stuck between the white world and the black world. He's too black to be white and too white to be black.
Yep.
So maybe this is part of it, just showing that he's just got no place to go. And, you know, we know this, you know, it's look, both middle-aged white men here, not trying to pretend we know the authentic black experience in America. But certainly, you know, I've heard stories of and seen students who complain, you know, who have been black, who complain about other black kids who try to act white or speak white. And, you know, that's kind of what gets him in trouble here is that he's educated in France. He's a well-read, intelligent, well-spoken young man. And that doesn't sit well with the thugs in the neighborhood. Yeah, which is a thing, you know. And so here he is. He's trapped. He's not accepted by the white cops. He's not accepted by the black thugs. And this is kind of where he is, right? He's kind of floundering in the world. He's looking for a home. And I think that maybe that's where you're going to be going with this theme.
Right, because he doesn't identify with any ethnic group, right? I mean, he's never lived, based off of what I've gotten out of the show, with people who are necessarily, in other words, hasn't lived in an ethnic neighborhood, if you want to call
right.
People of one certain race ethnic neighborhood. In other words, he may have right. lived in an all-white neighborhood, he may live in an all-black neighborhood in a sense, but he never identified with either because he had a parent of both races and he married a white woman based off of, you know, the season one where they did all the flashbacks of him as a young adult right before but right before he gets arrested for a crime. And So he's definitely and growing up in France, so you know, so he's not used to the States. So so he has really no identity except the identity that he decides to create for himself, which is, I guess, just being a man.
Yep. And you know, so he's now again stuck in the War of the Gods, and he's going to have to presumably pick something of his side. You know, whether he sides with humanity, old gods, new gods, we'll see.
Right. Yeah, it never occurred to me. But you're right, there is three, because he could side with the humanity and say, he doesn't. Yeah, that's a good point. Right. So, So we got the story of his wife and the leprechaun going out searching for him. We have Odin and Mr. Nancy going out to find someone as well. What the heck was the name of the individual they're searching for?
Mr. Town?
The djinn. The two djinn guys are looking for Gadnir. The leprechaun and Shadow's wife are looking for him to rescue him from what appeared to be the greys that took him in last episode. And then we have Technical Boy searching for Meteor to try to get Meteor on board with the new gods. And then we have the djinns going out searching for Gadnir. So what's your thought? Where do you want to start? Which scene? I guess we should, rather than doing scene by scene, maybe we should do story by story.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, although you know, I'm with you. I'm a little unclear about the long run for this.
Yeah, same.
So, let's start. I think the easiest one for me is Laura and Matt Sweeney.
I would agree, because we know what they're going for, right? They're going to try to rescue Moon. And as we know, she has that ability from season one where she sees a glow in the distance wherever he is. Like it's some sort of magic she has, whether it's because she's dead or whether, who knows. So she can kind of generally find him or, you know, follow the beacon that she sees, but no one else can see.
Right. So they go off together. The little things that I thought were interesting in that Matt Sweeney mentions that she's not as strong as she would have been a week ago.
Right. Yeah. Which makes sense because she's rotting away. Right. So,
right.
So I guess he's trying to claim that, well, let me ask you this, was that statement, was that also her superpowers as well? Cause we know that she can lift things as well, you know, like like magically lift things over her head and whatnot. She can lift the car, an example in this episode, but is he referring to that as well? Or is he referring to just her health, meaning she's weakening in the sense that she's closer to death or true death?
Well, she's getting closer to true death. Her body's rotting away.
Right.
So
did he mean she's losing her supernatural powers too when he said that?
Well, I'm guessing she's getting weaker. I mean,
yeah,
whatever the force is that's animating her. I'm a little surprised that she hasn't, because it goes back to the first season. She is she has a conversation with, I guess, Shadow, saying that she doesn't believe in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, when she finally dies and she's taken by Anubis and, you know, her heart is weighed and found wanting, you know, she asks, what's going to happen to me? And he says, you believed in nothing and into nothing you will go, right? So she goes where her faith sends her, and she has no faith, so she will just cease to be. And that's what's awaiting for her.
Right.
At some point, at least if you believe what Matt Sweeney's been taunting, you know, waiting for his coin to fall out, she'll be dead. She'll be dead again and go back to nothing. That's, she's trying to save it. But my point, I guess, I'm sorry, what I was trying to say is that she has been through all of this and she hasn't found any faith in anything yet, except for, again, that it's all bullshit. So she hasn't found any faith in anything larger, and I kind of found that to be surprising.
Now, their story, since it was a little back and forth and quips and comic relief in a sense, it was very much a road trip film in a sense, or scenario. Besides these little things that you mentioned, like her not finding anything to believe in and all this other stuff and whatnot, did you feel that any of it really told us anything about the story or where we're going? Because I felt it was really just them following Shadow. We knew they were eventually going to find Shadow and catch up to him. But generally, the time between them, even though funny and enjoyable to see the characters and their interaction, there wasn't really much there until they get to the train, I guess, where the Shadow's being held.
Right. I mean, they do this thing there. They hit a dead end.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Well, it was interesting that they hit the dead end in the
road
nowhere.
Just ends, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I buy that she just kind of lays down and gives up at that point.
Right.
But then Ned Sweeney has this ability to travel through his hoard of gold, I'm guessing.
Right.
Which
is odd, weird, because why didn't they do it before?
Right. And it feels like a little bit of a cheat.
Yeah,
but it's also an unnecessary cheat.
Or something.
Yeah, but it also seems an unnecessary cheat, unless this is something that's going to come up again later. And I don't mind that he has this ability. I'm just curious why we haven't seen it yet.
Right.
So, yeah, and then they make it to the train and jump on board the train. They kick some ass on the train.
Yeah, and these are like Mr. Town's minions. So now, who is this Mr. Town guy?
Who is he? I don't know. He's one of the new gods. I don't know who he's supposed to be.
Right.
I'm wondering if he's the old version of Mr. World.
Interesting.
But
yeah.
I really have no idea. I have no idea. Like
the local Grange or something back in the day. And then now that's been replaced with the online community, maybe he was the new god before the internet and all that other stuff. Interesting.
Yeah. So,
but what did he have Shadow for in the first place? What was he trying to get out of Shadow? Because this is where we get Shadow's backstory of how he comes from Paris to New York City and gets arrested and then his mother dies of cancer or some disease we don't really know. At least I didn't pick it up.
He's trying to find out why is Odin
interested in him?
I think he's dispatched by Mr. World to kind of interrogate him, to find out who this man is, why he's important, right? Because this is information. Mr. World is a lot about information, right? And living in the modern information age. And this is, I guess, information he lacks. He does not have much information on Shadow Moon.
Right.
And so he wants to know who this guy is and why is it that Odin cares about him or is invested in him or, you know, however you want to describe it. So that makes some sense.
Right.
I can't help but feel, and this may be me, and again, being more aware of behind-the-scenes stuff, that the whole introduction of Mr. Town and the interrogation scenes, you know, are kind of lacking the visual flair I would have expected more of in the first season.
Yeah, okay.
But of course, it probably also would have cost three times as much to do it that way.
Yep.
I like the actor who played Mr. Town as Dean Winters, who's been in a ton of things forever. I remember him originally as playing Ryan O'Reilly in the TV series Oz and on HBO.
Okay, yep.
And then he's had a lot of other bit parts and things here and there. But he's been around for a long time. He's played Trouble for, I can't remember which insurance company it is. It's Progressive. So in some insurance companies, he's a spokesperson for.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he had a lot to do here. I don't think he had a personally great introduction. I'm hoping, you know, we see more from him later.
Yep.
But he didn't have like the flair that we got from Technical Boy and Media and Mr. World previously.
Yep. Yeah, he was almost like a cipher just to have or even a narrator to ask questions or press a button so we would go flashback to Shadow's introduction as a young adult or a young man or a teenager or whatever. He was more just to do that. I mean, there was nothing else about him. I mean, you mentioned you weren't even quite sure. Maybe he was the quote unquote Mr. World before Mr. World. And I mentioned, yeah, maybe because his name's Town, that he could be, you know, the little town center or wherever where people used to meet, and then he was created because of that, the gossip of towns, local towns or something, and that's what
right
he
and
is.
It which makes me wonder if that's the case, is there like Mr. Town and Mr. City, you know,
right.
You know, a Mr. Nation before you get to a Mr. World or what it is,
right?
So there's them. We have the djinn and
right, and the other guy,
Salim going to get the Odin spear, which you know is Odin's weapon.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't really know much about that, and I haven't had a chance to research it because I'm kind of busy right now at work.
Right.
And that feels like a tune in. We'll catch up with them next week or.
You're right. Yeah, because we didn't really focus on them, right? They just take off, and that was pretty much it for them this episode generally.
Right, and you're having the same kind of banter with them this week as you had last week.
Right.
You know, so that story is not resolved. You go live your life. No, I'm going with you. And it's like, okay. You know,
right.
we were in that same spot we were with them last week.
Right.
And Wednesday and Nancy go for a drive. And I don't know that we actually really got where they were going. And I think that could have been more interesting, but we spent very little time with them.
Right.
And before Odin parks in front of the train, lets the train hit his car, and Nancy makes colorful comments about the, you know, the crazy guy. I didn't get a lot out of their story arc. I don't even know how much they would get by putting the car on the tracks. I honestly really don't know what would happen if a car train hit a car. Is that really going to stop it?
Not based off of other movies I've seen where a train hits a car. Sometimes it derails the train, right? But other times it'll just take out the car and keep on going. So I don't know. And now the train is basically the same train that Shadow was on, right?
I thought it was the same train that Shadow was on.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
But that's where the story ends. Now, maybe it'll turn out to be something different, but I believe it's the same.
Yeah.
If it's something different, I would find that a little bit more interesting, to be honest, because if it was the same train, then I don't understand the purpose of them splitting their forces.
Right. So a lot of these stories were, I mean, it was, it said it was a 60 minute episode based off of video on demand or, you know, after it was live. But the first 5 minutes or so is ads for Stars and then the credits and previews previously on. And then the episode ends 5 minutes early for credits and then I guess coming next. So the episode really was only about 50 minutes or so. And yet, which is interesting because it was a longer episode than last week's technically. But again, not much happens, I felt, except for Shadow's backstory, which like you stated was still unresolved. So I guess anything else you want to talk about Votan and Mr. Nancy's little journey there?
You had the gag with the fried chicken.
Yeah, all right.
Which I know they're trying to make a comment, right? That is a stereotype.
Okay, yeah.
But it's fried chicken. You know, it's right. You're going to hit a drive-thru. KFC is a perfectly viable option.
And everybody loves fried chicken. Doesn't matter what stereotype it is.
Right. And then he just makes it worse by throwing it out the window and then telling Wednesday when he wakes up, I ate it all. It's
right.
You know that. So he leans into the stereotype. So even that, I get the humor of the moment.
Right.
But you know, he couldn't have said, can we get, I don't know, Panera bread instead?
Yeah. Or McDonald's or Subway. I mean, or just to sit down at a normal restaurant too. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're right. So obviously they're trying to make a point about the stereotype. I assume everybody knows that stereotype, right? I mean,
it's, you would assume, but I mean, and it's look.
Well,
it's perfectly
what's
valid.
It for international viewers of the show, they may not know. I mean, I don't know, but the stereotype is African American folk enjoy fried chicken. For some reason, I think that's what they were trying
to. Because it's freaking delicious. That's why.
Right. Right. And but so for some reason it's a stereotype and it's become negative connotation. And so I assume that's what they were trying to demonstrate here. Though Votan, technically, he's obviously Caucasian, but he's European, technically, right? He's a, even
right.
Though as we know, there's a large Scandinavian population in the United States too. But I mean,
and he has spent the last several hundred years in the United States because right. he supposedly came over with the
Vikings. Right. Yeah.
So I just even then it was an amusing aside, but not right. that amusing. And you know, the dialogue just doesn't quite sparkle the way it did when Mr. Nancy was telling stories in the first season, you know. And even this, the stereotype, you know, calls back to him saying in the first episode he was in,
right,
where he tells the slave that his mother got thrown overboard, you know, because she wouldn't have sex with the captain.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do you know she can't swim? You know, and he says something along the lines of, you all got to wise up, take some swimming lessons. This is how we get stereotyped.
Right.
You know, so he has a weirdly a little bit more fun in a much more, but also in a much darker way with a different stereotype that black people can't swim.
Right.
Which
oddly, I've never heard that stereotype myself. To be
yeah,
honest.
It is one. I don't know where it comes from, but it is a stereotype. It's not as famous as fried chicken and large penises, but it's out there.
Right. Okay. Interesting. That, yeah. I mean, this show, I guess the show was the first time I ever heard of it as a stereotype, and I didn't even know that it was. That's interesting. Okay. Very well. Yeah, so they're trying to say something else there. I'm not sure what else. So I'm guessing, based off of the source material, I haven't read the source material, you have not either. Maybe the source material is more than just a war between the gods and Neil Gaiman is actually talking about various social justice things or something, or...
Well, I mean, social justice has a negative connotation because of the way it's handled by some people or utilized by some people. You know, when you're talking about, the existence of racism and the history of racism in America, I don't think that alone is enough to make it social justice in the connotation a lot of people mean by that today.
Right.
It's reality. And this is a book that was written, 20 years ago?
20 years ago, probably, yeah, something like that.
That definitely, I'm sure, touches on a lot of themes about America and American history. And there's certainly one that they touched on a lot with, whether it was the Irish coming to America and the indentured servants, or the slaves coming to America, or the immigrants coming to America. You know, there's all sorts of things, in all those stories, which, again, I'm missing from the first season, although I understand why they're not really needed this season.
Right.
I really missed that aspect of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're only two episodes in. And even season one, even though there were some interesting aspects, it had its issues as well. So the question is, will the issues that are hampering anything with this season, something that can be broken out of, as I guess generally, if we look back and since you especially have revisited season one, having what I'm told is, and I think you even said it, it's a better show to binge watch than watch episode by episode, because these episodes are very vague or very thin with plot point moving. Things along.
Right, or maybe the movement becomes more obvious if you're watching episodes consecutively and you can pick up on on things when you just watched an episode an hour ago as opposed to a week ago. But it's sort of like that, going back to Game of Thrones, the third season of Game of Thrones, or is the fourth season? Where there was a scene where it just seemed like a lot of nothing was going on.
Oh, yeah.
It was probably the third season. Basically, until the Red Wedding, there was a lot of people walking about and not ever getting anywhere.
Right.
But when you binge-watched it, you know, those things
weren't apparent. Didn't
matter so much. You know, it was easier to see as a longer part of a story, and you're stretching it out over 2 or 3 days as opposed to stretching it out over 8 weeks. So it doesn't, it is literally isn't as long as it was before. I just felt, you know, I hate to say I was almost bored by the episode. There was nothing that grabbed me or engaged me. And what I will say with the first season, it was always at least visually interesting, and the dialogue was always interesting, even if the plot didn't move very far or in an obvious way. And I haven't found that. And again, it's only episode 2, but like little things like Mr. Town, I just haven't found presented in an interesting way. And I haven't found the dialogue quite as snappy as it was in the first season.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And again, in the first season, I felt it was a little, it was, even if it was weak in certain points and certain points, I was confused. It did hold my interest a little more than say this episode here, because in the first one I had questions. And so I was curious to have those questions answered. While here, the questions aren't as really, in other words, we now know what's going on in a sense, and so a lot of the stuff is, like you said, just going from point A to B, and now we're just having to sludge through the mud between point A and B, while at least in season one, we were more curious about, you know, what is a god, and what, why are they on this journey, and who are these people, and what's going on? And so it kept my interest a little more than a sludge of two characters in a car talking to get from point A to point B. We eventually knew they were going to get to the train, so why didn't they just get to the train? We knew that the train was going to be stopped, so why didn't they have that happen quicker?
Well, they're trying to tell a story, and they want to have some time. There is that whole, you know, the journey thing, the character development, the chase is a part of it, but it wasn't a chase that it felt dramatic in any way. Right. Because
yeah,
most of it is coming out of Laura's vision, right?
Yeah. Right.
She's looking at the fire spout from the Ark of the Covenant traveling on the horizon.
Right.
Most of the time we're not seeing it, so we don't have that right. Urgency.
Right. And again, we know they're gonna get there, right? We know that they're going to eventually get to Shadow, whether it was this episode or next episode, you would think.
Right. And then it starts feeling, well, sort of like the story with New Media in this episode. You know, they're trying to explain that, you know, why Media has been recast.
Yeah.
You know, why is it no longer Gillian Anderson? Well, because, and I think they came up with a rational excuse here, which I liked. Which is, they have Technical Boy make an argument that, you know, get out of here with their old ass David Bowie, Marilyn Monroe, Lucille Ball bullshit, right?
Yep.
That the world has moved on, and so Media is coming up with a new identity. It's not necessary to do this. They could just as easily have stuck us with, you know, a different actress and let us roll with it, as Game of Thrones, which I keep coming back to, has done on often occasions. You know, but we never got to see New Media this episode.
Right.
You're right, where Technical Boy comes in, sees her, says something, and then I'll give
like,
you a minute.
Was that like Times Square or something?
Yeah, I think that was Times Square.
Yeah, okay.
So, and that wasn't bad, but that, of course, was the one story plot we never went back to in this episode that, all right, we'll just drag it out for another episode. I don't know that most people are that invested in who the new media is going to be, but this is damage control. Sort of like, you know, that they kind of gave a one offhanded comment about the crop damage in Kentucky, and then that's the last we've heard about what happened with Easter.
Right.
Although I have read, I read an article where they interviewed, you know, I think it was Neil Gaiman, about the plans for the show and the sort of the changes, and he puts as good a spin on the changes that on the turmoil behind the scene as he can.
Mm-hmm.
And part of this is driven by him, in that Brian Fuller and his partner wanted to steer the show further away from the novel, and Neil Gaiman wants it to stick closer to the novel. So I can't imagine he's complaining too much about the changes, since it's kind of getting his way. But anyway, one of the things that he said was that we haven't seen the last of Easter, that Easter will come back in the future. They just don't know who's she's going to come back as.
All right, so they are going to recast her as well.
Well, presumably they'll find a way to deal with this.
Right.
I don't know if Kristen Chenoweth is. She wasn't like Gillian Anderson. Gillian Anderson was like, "I'm out."
Yep.
Kristen Chenoweth was, well, maybe I'm out. You know, kind of seeing what they had in store for her, and now they're saying she didn't come back because of scheduling conflicts.
Right.
But now, sometimes scheduling conflicts are just that, and sometimes scheduling conflicts are a nice way of saying that they couldn't pay the person enough,
mm-hmm.
or they didn't want to come back.
Yep.
Whatever it is, it's a way of doing that that doesn't burn the bridge in case something can be worked out later on down the road.
Right. Now let's talk about those two for a second. First of all, in the book, as we know, Media is not one specific person. When she becomes David Bowie or Marilyn Monroe, she actually becomes them. So to have one actress or actor, because they could have actually used an actor if they wanted to have, but to use one actress in this case, meaning Gillian Anderson, you could actually argue that Gillian Anderson was stunt casting because she has somewhat of a following for genre. People
yeah.
would be curious and interested to see the show because of her. But throughout season one, her screen time was still very minimal. She had maybe 3 or 4 scenes, I think, and it probably didn't even come to an hour. So
no, they were. She only had David Bowie, Lucille Ball, Marilyn Monroe,
yep.
and Easter Parade, right, at the end.
Right.
And Easter Parade was very minimal. And about 5 minutes at most with the other three characters.
Mm-hmm.
But her moments in those, her performances were really good. And the unfortunate thing is that they picked something, right, which was to use the same actress in all 4 parts.
Right. And, which that makes it the stunt casting because they
well,
made
you could argue
famous...
stunt casting. It's that yeah. she's someone who got along with the former showrunner.
Yep.
She has certainly got the talent to do it, and she pulled it off. So, mm-hmm. you know, but you could also make arguments about. You know, Orlando Jones being stunt casting, or Ian McShay being stunt casting, or Crispin Glover being stunt casting. These are names. They certainly got names in there to draw attention to the show.
Yep.
And they didn't have much to do. And I think as an actor, it would be an interesting challenge to do these different characters.
Right.
So I certainly get that. But it would just be strange for them to shift how they present that character. Say, well, presented the character this way in the first season, and then we're going to present that character in a completely different way the next season. So they can do that. They could certainly have done that, but they've opted not to. They just recast and are trying to come up with an explanation for why they recast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I can understand that.
Now, for Kristen Chenoweth, for me, it's somewhat hard to believe it was constraints with time or something of that nature, because Kristen Chenoweth, though she's known well known for various television roles and whatnot,
and
for
Broadway,
me, I mean, she's still not a huge name by any means. I never heard of the actress until I saw this show. You know, because I don't.
Well, but it all depends. If you are a Broadway watcher like my wife is,
but again,
that is a big name.
Okay, but my point being is, it's not like she's going to get a better role somewhere else unless it's something that she really wants to do. In other words, she's not going to get paid huge money to do a role somewhere else necessarily, like Gillian Anderson could do.
Well, I don't know how much money she was getting for this.
But you see my point, what I'm trying to say here, is that she, by saying that I have other things to do because I can't come back because of I have other things to do, sounds suspicious to me because it's not like she's in high demand. So my guess is it was could be loyalty to Ford.
Well, she's on tour right now supporting, I guess, an album. Because I just found her webpage.
Okay.
So I don't know what she's been doing. You know, she's been on the road, I guess, touring in support of.
But I assume you understand what I'm talking about here.
Oh, I understand what you're talking about, but I'm saying this is somebody else who did something because she was probably doing it in part as a favor to Fuller and wasn't necessarily inclined to do a favor for the people they brought in to replace Fuller unless they could make it worth her while. But she's also not somebody that they necessarily felt the need to make it worth her while.
Right. Yeah, and I would agree with that.
They changed the style, and I like her. The stuff I have seen her in, I have liked her in a lot. She really does have a fantastic voice, but that's not the reason that she was brought onto the show.
Right, right. I'm not disparaging the actress by any means, but honestly, besides Gillian Anderson, I don't think anybody on the show would be enough to draw off large groups of people to watch the show. I'm a huge Ian McShane fan. People probably know that follow me on the Dark Discussions podcast, Facebook group and whatnot, but he's still not a huge draw. And everybody else, like you said, are mostly character actors like Christian Glover and whatnot. And so.
Right. I think they went with, this isn't a case of finding a single big name.
Like I mean, Emily Browning I like her a lot, and she was almost became a huge actress and superstar, but unfortunately, due to crappy scripts, those films didn't make the money they thought, so she hasn't become the A-list of people who thought she was, but again, people probably aren't watching the show because of her. But continue.
Right. There was a TV series a couple of years ago, it was a sitcom that had Robin Williams and Sarah Michelle Gellar. And, you know, that's one way to go about it. Take two big names, throw them in there, and hope they draw people in. And I think this went a different direction, which is you get a lot of lesser-known names,
mm-hmm.
but ones that maybe aren't all overlapping with the same audience.
Right.
You know, so Orlando Jones might hit one target, and Kristen Chenoweth hits one, and Gillian Anderson hits one.
And for example, before this show, I didn't even know who Orlando Jones was either, for example.
Okay.
People may know who Kristen Chenoweth is and Orlando Jones is, but someone like me who didn't watch their programs have no idea who they are until this show.
Right, but this was just something that – my point is that they're getting it by depth rather than by star power.
Absolutely. That makes sense.
You know, this is the you know, if you're putting together a fantasy baseball team, you could take Mike Trout – and then a bunch of schlubs, or you can get a whole bunch of guys that are maybe not Hall of Famers and maybe not all stars, but like on the border, and you just get depth that way if you can't get a superstar on mm-hmm. your team. So yeah. It's just a different way to do it. And anyway, regardless, Fuller got who he wanted, but a couple of those people were there for him only. So,
right.
All right. So anyway, so that's changed. It seems to be changing that story. The show has been picked up, I should point out, for a third season.
It sure has. Yep, we got picked up. Big
news.
And
with a new showrunner, again.
Oh, different than this season.
Yes.
Interesting. How about that?
And I know he had worked on a season of Dexter. I don't remember which season.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember his name right now. I remember reading his bio, and I wasn't turned off by it, but I wasn't usually impressed by it either. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean much.
Right, right.
It's renewed. Charles Eglie. Eglie? E-G-L-E-E.
Oh, yeah. E-G-L-E-E. Yep.
Eglie previously worked on Walking Dead, Dexter, and The Shield. He's executive producing. So, we'll see. Mixed pedigree.
Yep, yep. So, yeah, it looks like he, Hemlock Grove. That was the two seasons. He worked on that.
Yeah, I didn't hear great things about that one, although I don't know. So, yeah, producer for Hemlock Grove, producer for Walking Dead. That was the first season he was the executive producer.
Right.
Dexter.
Shield for five seasons. He did stuff. Dark Angel.
Yeah. All right, so good. He it looks like the season he was.
For Dexter? Oh, 2008.
Dexter was 24 episodes, so it was a couple of seasons.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And...
Yeah, 2008 and 2009 seasons, whichever those were.
So that was the Trinity season and the season after that.
Okay.
He did Murder One, which is his TV series I liked way back in the day. So, okay, I'm liking his all the way back to Moonlighting as a producer.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, and he worked with Roger Corman and James Cameron on Piranha 2 this morning. As H.A. Milton, he went by. Interesting.
Uh-huh.
And same elsewhere. So, yeah, I mean, he did have a Emmy Award for Outstanding Drama Series for New NYPD Blue in 1995. So, yeah, he has a few awards.
And I know Murder One was nominated for a lot of awards in its two seasons.
He got a BAFTA for Murder One. Yep. 1997.
All right, so I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Yep.
And I'm not saying, you know, I'll miss the style, the change in style for, you know, what Fuller was doing. But, you know, Fuller can sometimes be overly thick in his imagery, and sometimes that can get in the way of the storytelling. So I don't mind that it would be changing the shape of
I'll say one thing. Like you said, season 3 and season 4 of Dexter, and those were pretty damn good seasons. So,
yeah, it's
The Shield, you know. So
yeah, I just think that this show, maybe it's the behind the scenes stuff coming through, and it's a lot of times if you get these kind of changes, it takes people an episode or three to work out their kinks and figure out where they're going. And sometimes, and as we've seen in other shows, you miss important points because they don't seem important and they pay off down the road. We'll see where they go, but this really felt much more of an exposition-y, this is where we're going for the rest of the season. But even that, I don't know where they're going for the rest of the season, right? Because, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with, you know, Mr. Town and Shadow and, you know, the Odin Spear. I don't know. Now Odin did a half day trip with Nancy. Nancy says, I'll see you. I don't remember where he was going to see him. I'll see you later. And he walks off on his own.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when we're going to see him again. They do get, completely forgot to mention it, they do mention, was it somebody in Louisiana when they're looking for a way to bring her back to life?
Yes.
Since Jesus didn't work out?
Yes.
So I know another guy, and I think it was somebody in Louisiana, which they're going to do after they get Shadow Moon back. So which is their storyline? Is that where they're going to go next? I don't know. I'm still not any more confident as to where the show is going right now. I know there's a story. I know they're following the story,
right?
You know, but
well, there's a
reason. I just want it well told.
Well, there's a reason why, you know, we were discussing the recasting of Easter and Meteor, and also the new showrunner for season 3, because there's not really much to talk about, in my opinion, about this episode 2, the Beguiling Man.
Yeah, and I didn't know who the Beguiling Man is referring to.
I know. I was going to ask you that, but I said, you know what? I don't want to put Mike on the spot, because if Mike asked me who the beguiling man was, I would say I have no idea. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you could argue it refers to Wednesday.
Okay.
But he doesn't have a big role in this episode. You could argue, I guess, that refers to Shadow. Maybe, but he wasn't that beguiling in the flashbacks, which is what was focused on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it's really, it's a good question. What did it mean?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, two other miscellaneous things. One important one we'll see. In the flashback, we do see that, I'm guessing it was Wednesday that he ran into in the hospital or clinic or wherever it was. Who gives him the coin?
Yeah, there was no doubt that it was Wednesday. Or at least in my opinion, I felt it was Wednesday. Absolutely.
Yeah, but the voice sounded different to me.
Yeah, yeah. It still sounded closest to Ian McShane, but you're right. It was ambiguous enough that it could have been someone else or even a new character that we don't even know.
Well, I don't know if they tried to change his voice to make him sound younger. Or make him sound different and try to keep it a mystery. Although, again,
well,
if it's a mystery, it's a really shitty mystery.
Right. Yeah, because we don't see his face at all, right? So I was thinking, okay, maybe they didn't have the ability to turn him young like they did for Samuel L. Jackson in Captain Marvel. So I was thinking, all right, maybe they were purpose. But then with the voice, like you said, is a little off from Ian McShane's real voice. That, okay, maybe they're intentionally not showing his face because it's supposed to be hidden. We don't supposed to know that we're supposed to guess that it's him, but not quite sure. Leave questions in our mind.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm bringing up the beguile, and it says for the verb beguile, just for to see if we can identify what Merriam-Webster says about it. Charm. To charm or enchant someone, sometimes in a deceptive way. Trick into doing something. So are they referring to Shadow Man?
As a grifter? Or it could be referring to the two of them, right? Because they're both grifters. But it wasn't the beguiling man, not the beguiling men.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, it could be all of them. Everybody in the episode, because everybody was told to do something in a deceptive way, maybe. Maybe Odin is telling people to go off and do all these things, and they think it's for one reason, but he's really lying to them, and it's for a different reason.
Yeah, he would be the one I would that best fits this description, given his role in the series, but he has, to me, maybe it'll change on a rewatch.
Yeah.
But he seems like he has such a small,
very small, yeah,
role in this particular episode. It's weird that it would have him in the title if that was the case.
That's true.
So I don't know. I don't understand.
Basically, the episode was the flashbacks of Shadow Man. I mean Shadow Moon, and him being asked questions by Mr. Town, the Leprechaun, and his wife searching him out, and then one big scene of media techno boy in Times Square, and then the rest was very small parts.
The other thing is they talk about how do you pronounce her name, the Russian woman, the psychic who died.
Oh, yeah. Zornia,
that was it. Yeah. And I was trying to decide whether is she coming back? Is she not coming back? They said, who will be the new Zornia? Makes me wonder.
Yeah.
Like
right.
We said that maybe that was Odin 20 years ago, but they ask who's going to be the new Zornia. And the question is this something that happens with all the gods when they die? Somebody else takes their place as them?
Right. And will she become younger? Because they could even say, you know, cast her as a rebirth as a younger actress too, you know?
Right.
But I mean, that's always possible.
Was that a different Odin from 20 years ago?
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So I don't know how that works with the death of gods. You know, do they, because they make comments, oh, I've been dead before. You know, better to be dead than forgotten, because they come back from being dead. You don't come back from being forgotten.
Right, right. Yeah, right. That's a good point. And each mythology is different, right? Because the Norse gods, I don't think they really age, but they can be killed. But
right.
other gods are invincible and in theory don't die, except, and as the show gets around that by saying if all their worshipers disappear and die off, then they will die too. But, you know, some gods, you know, why is Zonya an old woman while the fertility god from Africa, who's the oldest god in the world, you know, a young hot, you know.
Well, I think that has to do with the perception
right.
of who the god is. She's a fertility god, so she's fertile. This is, Zonya is a, I guess, perceived as a crone. And so that's how she is.
Yeah, okay.
That would be my guess. Odin is the father of the gods in Norse mythology, so he's going to be seen as an older character.
Right.
You know, I imagine.
Surabhaug was interesting because when they went to that alternate world where it was like Valhalla or wherever, all the gods were dressed like how they would have looked by, you know, the mythos that they come from, except Surabhaug was dressed in like a suit. It was kind of interesting. I don't know if you noticed that.
He had like I didn't. I you're right. You know, I didn't click to me. I don't know why. There is one other god that we haven't seen again. You know, that was in the first season.
Okay, who's that? Which one? Oh, you mean the Egyptian guy or the Sudanese god?
Oh no. Okay, so there's another one. I was thinking there is a character in the prison who's basically Loki.
Oh yeah, that was Tucker, right? Oh no, not Tucker. I forget the actor that played him. Sorry, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah, there's
right.
rumors that he's Loki. You're absolutely right.
And he supposedly, if I believe the commentary tracks, has a bigger episode. Has a bigger presence this season. He would be coming back.
Right. What was his name? Do you remember in the TV show? Because he could be Loge, because that's the German name for him. But Loki's the Norwegian name for him. He's such a small role that I forget.
Yeah, he's the one that says, give him the advice, don't fuck with the lady at the in the airport.
Yeah, exactly.
His name is Loki Leismith. So LOW, second word, KEY, then Leismith is his last name.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, Loki Leismith. Yeah.
But he's supposed to be coming back for more. Supposedly, he's played by. Lost his name. Played by Jonathan Tucker.
Yeah, Tucker. So I was right. It was Tucker. Yeah.
Right, and he was in the ruins. He was in Sleepers. He had a role in Westworld, which we've also done. Justified, Parenthood.
Oh, first time I ever saw him was in Sleepers.
Black Donnellys, I kind of remember that. An episode of Masters of Horror.
Yeah.
The remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Wow, that was 2003. It's old enough that we could almost make a remake of the remake.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wow, holy shit, we're getting old.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, he's from Massachusetts. How about that? Nice. Irish Catholic background on his father's side and Romanian Jewish on his mother's side. Raised in Charlestown, Massachusetts. How about that? I had no idea he was a Bostonian. How about that? That's cool. So, so he's coming back for a bigger role here. Okay, that's pretty interesting.
Well, that's what they said in the commentary tracks of the disc one.
And the question is,
the disc set of the box set of the originals of the first season.
Right.
But since
that
they
could
made
be
that.
Outdated. Yeah.
Yeah. That changed a lot, you know, so they were talking all about how excited they were for what had been hinted for season two.
Yeah.
And then they dumped the showrunners and rewrote all the scripts.
Right. Well, it all comes down to the book, right? We haven't read the book. So if Loki plays an important role in the book, then he'll be back, right? Because now Neil Gaiman has
presumably
control back. And Loki, obviously, is very important in Norse mythology. And he may, if he's back in this show, could betray Odin just as he did in the mythos.
Right. I have a feeling, I mean, that there are, I think, three reasons for the change in showrunners.
Right.
And reason number one, they wanted the budget to be brought down.
Yep.
Because, again, $30 million over budget the first season. Reason number two, they wanted the trains to run on time. Because there were all sorts of problems behind the scenes in the first season with trying to figure out how to put the episodes together, where is this story form, and editing everything that they filmed to get it into a cohesive shape. You know, they ended up having to do one less episode because of the time it took them to do it and the cost overruns. You know, so just smooth out the process. And then reason number three is that Neil Gaiman was trying to, I don't want to say he had more control, but he wanted to keep this, again, sticking closer to his book rather than venturing far afield from it. And I don't know how different they were planning on being, you know, but I imagine for the executive producers, the budget was probably the biggest thing. So, you know, if Tucker is going to cost the money,
right,
you know, you never know if they say, well, we'll find a way to do that storyline without this actor.
Right.
You know, we'll see how it all plays out.
Sure.
Or maybe
sure.
We're the actor was supposed to be in six episodes this season. We'll knock him down to two episodes this season. You know, you never know how they're going to meddle with things in order to keep the budget down.
Sure. No, and that makes sense. That makes sense because, honestly, you don't really need all these character actors because, again, even though they are people we may know, it's not like people are watching the show because of them. I mean, a few exceptions. I mean, I'm sure there's fans of Jonathan Tucker fan club that would watch it just because, you know, they like him or whatever, or some girl thinks he's hot or whatever. But generally, no matter how great of an actor he is, and he is a fantastic actor, people aren't going to watch the show because of him. So if you're going to cast people for these shows, you don't necessarily need superstar television actors or character actors to do it, because a lot of those people who are the character actors that are now we see everywhere were right at one time the unknowns that were lucky enough to get a lead in some television show 10 years ago. And then, you know, 7 years later, after the show has been canceled, they are basically Jonathan Tucker now.
Right. And there's always going to be someone there are people who have niche fan bases, and like take someone like just Kristen Chenoweth, who is a Broadway star. And if you follow Broadway, you know who she is. If you don't follow Broadway, you could run her over. You would never notice, you know, because she's very tiny. But, you know, there are, and you know, there are people that are actors that are household names. You know, I joked that when we did Scarecon New England last year, and I said I got to do Q&As, I got to ask the celebrities questions at their panels, and people were asking me, well, who are the celebrities? And I start running through celebrities who are, some of them were, you know, like David Naughton from American Werewolf in London. You get blank, 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 you know.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Like,
Doug Bradley from Hellraiser, blank, blank, you know, nothing. And then you say,
that's
Elvira. And they go, oh, Elvira. I know Elvira. You know, you don't have an Elvira in this show.
Well, right. Because Elvira was more than just the Elvira that did her television show or hosting
right
show. Versus, say, if you didn't watch X-Files, you won't know who Gillian Anderson is. Necessarily.
Yeah, she's got a name. I don't think but again, I always use the example on Dark Discussions, which is it somebody my mother would know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, admittedly, my mother is now closing in on her 73rd birthday in about 2 weeks.
Wow, she's young.
She was born in 46.
Wow, she's young. How about that?
So, yeah, it's just, you know, so she's not quite as in touch as obviously she used to be, you know. And quite frankly, I'm at the point, I don't know if you're at the point, where I see movie ads and it says, starring this actor and that actor and this other actor. I'm like, I don't know who the hell these people are. You know, it's because...
Especially if they're TV actors.
Yeah, especially if they're TV actors. You know, it's, yeah. Oh, because this is somebody who made it big on the Disney Channel or the Nickelodeon or whatever it is. Like, right. I don't know. It's all aimed at young people. Right. I'm like, I have no idea who that is. And that's right. kind of where you are with American Gods. They're name actors, but niche name actors. A lot of, oh, I recognize those faces, maybe, or I kind of recognize those names, but they're not ones that go, oh, I got to go see it. Anyway.
Sure, sure. The one that I always use as an example is Dexter. Michael, what's his name? Michael Anthony Hall? Was he the lead?
Yeah.
Yeah, like for example, I would have never known who he is if I never seen that show. And, well, you know, and then my wife doesn't know who he is, but she knows I like the show Dexter. And so when she's reading Star Magazine, she sees the actor from Dexter. And it's like, oh, I've never seen him, though, because I never watched the show. I mean, a great example for me was when I watched the movie Drive and Bryan Cranston's in it. And that's the first time I ever seen him. And so I always knew him from Drive, not from...
Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, I never saw him in that, nor did I ever see him in... what the hell's the drug show?
Breaking Bad.
So I had never seen him in either of those. And so when I first saw him, it was because of Drive. And then, of course, I binge-watched Breaking Bad. But the point is that if I had never... seen him in Drive then did an episode on Breaking Bad with you guys for Dark Discussions, then I would have never known who he was as an actor.
Right, and because audience is becoming so fractured and
right,
yeah, you're not getting the same Q rating that Bill Cosby got or you know, Andy Griffin got, you know, and all these big actors in the golden right. age of, you know, Lucille Ball, right? Or Dick Van Dyke, right. or
yeah, Robin,
you know,
Williams, from
Robin Williams, or Bob Newhart, or any of these
Carol
people.
Carol O'Connor, yep. Gene Stapleton. Who's the guy that played Three's Company? What was that actor's name?
John Ritter.
John Ritter and Suzanne Somers, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So there are people who like to point out that hit shows today would have been canceled in a heartbeat 40 years ago.
Right, right. Well, even like 30 years ago, when 90210 was on, I never watched that show ever, but I knew all the actors because they were always on Entertainment Tonight or covers of People magazine, you know. But now, with, like you said, it's so fractured. There's hundreds of actors on hundreds of different television shows, never mind movies. That yeah, it's they're not superstars anymore. That, you know, I mean, Sharon Daugherty was a superstar. On 90210, even though I'd never seen the show, I knew who she was.
Right.
You know, well, nowadays, it's not like that at all. It's kind of interesting.
So, I'm guessing since we've spent the last, 20 minutes not yeah. talking about the show.
Yeah, well, we have, but we've been talking about it.
Yeah, very.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm guessing, does that mean we're kind of out of things to talk about for this week?
Pretty much. I mean, there really wasn't, the episode really wasn't much there, and then the only thing that was important or seemed important, the backstory of Shadow, like you said, didn't really answer much anyway. So,
yeah, and I just didn't find it even that compelling as a storyline. And other people, you know, mileage is going to vary. We'll see how it plays forward. Is this going to be something we're going to be seeing all season? You know, like we saw the Coming to America shorts last season. Are we going to be seeing little bits and pieces of who Shadow Moon was this season? I don't know.
Right.
We'll see. It's still really early, and I just have to say I'm not going to say this was a bad episode, but it just didn't grab me. And usually, I find the show compelling, previously, certainly for visual style, but also for the actors and for the dialogue, and sort of the mythic landscape, but this just didn't play it up very well.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I didn't find much in this episode, really. It was just basically, if we have a point A to Z, we really just moved to C, type of thing. You know, it was like taking a few steps forward, but not getting anywhere enough to really even spell a word, you know, because we only still have A, B, and C. You can't spell anything with that except cab.
Right, but every now and then you need filler episodes. You need things to move the story a little bit, and some series it's just more obvious than others. And
you know what? I would have liked if they had just stuck with Shadow Moon, and he was captured by Mr. Town. Mr. Town uses a machine to read his thoughts about his childhood, and then we just have a whole episode of his childhood, similar to, you know, the Leprechaun episode from season one.
Yeah, even that one had some stuff in the modern day, but yeah, it was a lot. Yeah, this one, it was just an odd amount. I would have liked to see that. I think that might have been more interesting. They could have had some more time to give
Laura
varied
Moon
story beats.
Yeah, because Laura Moon had one of those episodes last year, season two, right? And it worked really well.
Yeah.
So they could have done something like that with Moon, Shadow Moons. But again, I think it's intentional they didn't do that because they don't want to give away his whole backstory yet, because then I think that's part of the big mystery of this show, even though we can kind of gather already what the answer is to that, you know?
Well, my guess is, and I've been saying this for a while, that I think this is supposed to be a 3-season show.
Mm-hmm.
And end of season one was revealing who Wednesday was.
Yep.
And
which
so
which we all knew anyway, right? I mean, more or less.
And then I would kind of think that season, I'm guessing now that season two will be, you know, Empire Strikes Back, and at the end we'll find out, Odin, I am your father, or something like that.
Yeah. So, all right, very well. Before we give our final thoughts on this episode, episode one, or season one, only had 0.52 million viewers, which is the lowest in the entire two seasons. The Beguiling Man is to be determined.
It's the lowest by what margin, do you know?
Yeah, I'll tell you right now. The lowest before that was A Murder of Gods, episode 6 of last season, and that was 0.607.
So even that, it's almost 20% lower.
Yeah.
It's still not bad for a pay cable show, honestly.
Yeah, for a fractured audience, yeah.
And given that they've renewed it for another season, they certainly must like what they can get from that. So.
Right. And they're probably making some money off of sales on discs and VODs and stars viewerships and stuff. Who knows? It'll be curious. I mean, we'll never know, but there's something about it that they know that it's worth doing a season three anyway. Next week, it's called Munin, Muninn.
Or am I misspelling it in my mind? Is that the name of one of his ravens?
Oh, maybe.
Muninn?
Muninn. Muninn.
Yeah, Hugin and Munin.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly right. It's the Ravens. You're absolutely right. Yep. Okay, there you go.
Nevermore.
Yeah. That's right. So those are Odin's two ravens. It's named after one of them. Deborah Chow, a television director, is going to be the director of it, mostly TV, movies, and shows. However, the screenplay is written by Heather Belson, who is huge on The Walking Dead and Black Sails. She has a huge wrote a lot, almost entire second season of Black Sails, which is a fairly popular pirate genre show.
Well, I just picked up that on digital. They had it on sale for something. It was like $15 for all four seasons. So I picked that up.
Okay.
And I'll be curious to watch it. Because I was already curious to begin with. It's just, there's so much to watch now.
Exactly. It really comes down to, you know, your time. And then she was a producer, co-producer of pretty much all of season five of The Walking Dead, and wrote a few of the episodes of...
might have been the strongest season they had. But,
So, yeah, Black Sails was a four-season thing, so that was probably... Yeah, so that's maybe something worth to check out, Mike, since you have... all four seasons and it ends. Yeah. Oh, that was a Starz as well. How about that?
Yep.
Okay. So let's give our final thoughts of this episode. I guess I'll start. Yeah. I mean, I felt it was fairly uneventful. Nothing really happened. I felt we learned a little bit about Shadow's backstory. Well, all the other characters really don't have much to do except have some interesting quips between themselves, and the media techno boy was a kind of an interesting scene, but all in all, not one of the more exciting episodes for me. Mike, what about yourself?
Yeah, I'm with you. I keep saying it was not compelling, and that's something I've never said about the show before, because again, there's always something there. And I just didn't think they gave the most interesting actors interesting things to do. You know, watching Emily Browning lay down in a field of flowers. Even the attack on the train, we've seen them do, you know, better and more visceral fight scenes. At least I think they have. So although what was there was decent. I don't know. We'll see. So... like I said, I'm hoping for more. I'm hoping this is ironing out the rough spots as they got new showrunners in place and were figuring out their direction. And, you know, and maybe in another episode or three, things will be better.
Indeed. All right. Sounds good. Hopefully you listeners aren't disappointed with our episode tonight. Again, I don't know what more we could have added really to critique the episode since most people who are listening to this episode of the podcast have probably seen the episode of the show and maybe actually feel similar to us. But if you want, email darkdiscussions@aol.com and give us your thoughts. We would like to hear what you felt about the episode, where you felt it was going and what it was trying to say and do. And maybe it could give it a different perspective for not only us, but other listeners to our podcast, as well as viewers of the show. And we will read your email on our podcast next week if you get it to us before Monday the 25th. I guess with all that stated, Mike, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Well, thank you once again for listening to Searching for American Gods. I apologize if we rambled a bit and if we didn't have a whole lot to say on this week's episode. But, you know, come back next week and hopefully we'll have a better episode to talk about and that everything will be a little bit more upbeat.